Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. As reporters continue to break stories about sexual harassment allegations against powerful men across the country, the news media are reckoning with accusations against some of their own high-profile figures. From television to radio to digital media, prominent men have been accused of groping, kissing, and sexual harassment. The list is very long. I'll just go over a few. Ryan Lizza at The New Yorker, Tavis Smiley at NPR and PBS, John Hockenberry, Leonard Lopate and Jonathan Schwartz at WNYC, Matt Lauer at the NBC Today Show, Lauren Stein at the Paris Review, Charlie Rose at PBS, Glenn Thrush at the New York Times, Michael Oreskes at NPR, Hamilton Fish at the New Republic, Don Hazen at Alternet, and Tom Ashbrook at WBUR. Several of these men have lost their jobs, some have resigned, others are being investigated. In many cases, the stories coming out illustrate how misconduct has pushed so many women, too many women, out of prominent roles or out of journalism altogether. On today's Your Call, we are continuing our Me Too series by speaking with women journalists about how the news media can create a working environment that actually values and supports women. Also, what needs to change to ensure abusers are not protected over victims. Catherine Goldstein is a digital journalist focused on women and work. She's a 2017 Nieman Fellow, a contributing editor to Slate's Better Life Lab, and teaches a course on how to develop a journalism career at the Harvard Extension School. Catherine wrote a piece for Vox about women who've been driven out of journalism because of harassment. Hi, Catherine. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
It's great to have you. Thank you. We're also joined by Christina Lopez, an Emmy Award-winning journalist and educator. Christina's work has been featured on NBC News, ABC News, and the San Francisco Chronicle. She currently teaches mass communications at Bakersfield College and reports for KVPR, Valley Public Radio. Christina was harassed at a TV job, and she writes about her experience for Bakersfield.com. Hi, Christina. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning, Rose. Thank you so much for having me.
It's great to have you. We're also joined by Kristen Gwynn. Kristen is a freelance reporter on the drug policy beat who began her career at Alternet. Alternet executive editor and founder Don Hazen recently resigned after BuzzFeed broke a story about accusations that he inappropriately touched employees, sent lewd emails, and showed them explicit photographs. Kristen worked at Alternet in New York from 2011 to 2013 and shared her story with BuzzFeed. Hi, Kristen. Thank you for joining us.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Well, I'm so glad we're doing this show, and thank you all for joining us. Christina and Kristen, thank you both for sharing your stories. I can't imagine what it's like to have to relive this over and over again. Before we get into your specific stories, I just want to ask all of you to reflect on what we're dealing with in the media. When I put that list of men together this morning, I realized that I left a bunch out. I mean, there are so many that it's really hard to keep up. Kristen, Gwynn, let's start with you. How are you reflecting on what's happening in our own industry?
I have definitely been doing a lot of reflection, that's for sure. It's overwhelming to see how many women are coming out, a lot of them women who I know well and respect. You know, this has been happening forever, but it just feels like now people are actually listening. And it's exciting that we're taking it seriously right now, but I certainly don't know, you know, how long it will last or where it's all going. So I'm a little bit nervous, too, that momentum might die down. But I think that with the right organizing, we can use this opportunity to really change how women and people in general experience the workplace.
Christina Lopez, what about you? How are you reflecting?
I think as a Latina journalist, I'm finally seeing a spotlight being shined on this epidemic that has plagued this industry for far too long. I think it's the unspoken reality of journalism today, in that we don't understand that this is a problem when we're in J school. We don't hear about these stories when we're looking for jobs. And it only comes to light when we are the victims. But as a victim myself, I've learned to change that word from victim to victor, and using this as my moment to reclaim my worth, my value, to understand that I don't have to be the victim anymore because this happened to me, and shame doesn't have to be a part of our story going forward. It may have been a part of our past, but that doesn't reflect who we are as female journalists and as women of color working in the journalism industry.
Right, and we will talk specifically about women of color throughout the hour today. Catherine, you wrote a great piece, a really sad piece. Actually, it made me really angry also for Vox, called When Harassment Drives Women Out of Journalism. We'll talk about a few of the women you interviewed, but how are you reflecting on how this is affecting our industry?
Well, I think it is truly a sad and scary time in some ways, but it's also, I think, an opportunity for us to reflect on what we can do to not just talk about taking down men for bad behavior, or this man got fired, or this man got fired, but how can we start to think about systemic ways to support women in journalism and really try to move the conversation forward and create the news industry to be a place where women are protected and thrive and continue to succeed. And that's what I'm really hoping will come from this moment, not just just a sort of wave of bad behavior after bad behavior. And I think some women are really starting to join together, and there's some really interesting initiatives that give me hope, like Press Forward and Time's Up. And there's some interesting, important movement in this field to not just have it be about another case of bad behavior, but really what we can do as an industry to change the dynamics.
And we're also talking about the fact that when you look at power structures and media outlets, the people at the top still tend to be white men. And the people who tend to get let go first when there's layoffs, which unfortunately so many media outlets are dealing with financial problems and layoffs, it's mostly women and women of color who tend to be fired or laid off first. So we've had those conversations for many, many years in the industry, but I'm seeing some of that information also get into these stories that are, you know, running from BuzzFeed to Vox, what have you. Can you also talk about that piece of it, Catherine?
I think it's really interesting that I think we're at a moment where people are starting to understand that in order to have vibrant, diverse 21st century newsrooms, you really need to have a range of people working for you. And if newsrooms go around thinking that we're just going to have layoff after layoff and we're going to treat our employees really badly and whoever's left is going to run our newsroom, that's not actually a successful way to run a 21st century news operation. And I do think that there's been a history of women and people of color being sort of the first to go in rounds of layoffs. But I am encouraged that there are a number of companies like Vox, like BuzzFeed, like the Gizmodo Media Group, who really understand that diversity isn't, and women in positions of power isn't just about, sort of charity or doing something that seems nice, but it's actually a business imperative if journalism is going to continue to survive and thrive in the 21st century context and challenges.
Kristen, do you agree with that? Are you hopeful about this moment? Do you think that media outlets are actually going to take this issue seriously, especially when it comes to ensuring that the newsroom is diverse?
I certainly hope so, and I do think Catherine is right that women are coming together and making a point that having including us is not a charity. I definitely felt like that was the narrative that I was fed when I was working at Alternet and experiencing sexual harassment was that I should be grateful to have a job at all. There was also a lot of fundraising that was done using the work of me and my coworkers who were women and saying, we have all these female bylines and using that to raise money for the website. So we were financially important to Alternet, but they didn't treat us as if we were. And I think that certainly Don and the board that allowed this to happen for so long are realizing our value and also our strength.
BuzzFeed broke the story about Alternet's editor and founder Don Hazen, and he resigned shortly after the story broke. Kristen, you worked at Alternet in New York from 2011 to 2013. You met Don Hazen while you were covering a protest for a class as a journalism student. If you don't mind, would you tell us what happened, just kind of summarize what happened?
Sure. Yeah, I was really young and did not have many connections in media or any connections at all when I met Don while reporting as a student. And he offered me an internship and then a job shortly after. And pretty much immediately, I realized that part of the deal was that I would be subject to persistent sexual harassment. That could be, you know, meeting with my boss at a COSI for a work meeting and him telling me he saw a person who looked like me on the internet and then pulling up a picture of a naked porn star, or inappropriate kind of hugs and kisses and touching in general. Also at work meetings and, you know, Friday night meetings inside his apartment. It was constant, and it was really demoralizing, and it really affected my ability to be confident that I could do the work that I was doing, because I felt like I wasn't valued for my ability as a journalist, but for what I the kind of opportunity, that harassment that I presented for my boss.
Can you elaborate on that a bit? Kristen wrote a really great story about young women who left journalism altogether because of the harassment they faced. How did this affect you as a young journalist?
I didn't write that article, but it did. It definitely affected just my ability to write well. Even there was a time while working at Alternet where I think I just internalized kind of what my boss had been telling me, and you know, he was very protective of me and didn't want me to ever write for any other publications, and if I did, it would create, you know, this huge issue that would lead to him kind of threatening my job. So I felt like Alternet was the only place I was good enough for, if I were even good enough for that.
Sorry, I meant Catherine. Catherine wrote that piece.
Similar names.
The Intercept had a really long piece titled, New Republic, Alternet, and Nation Institute Had No Real HR When Abuses Occurred. Kristen, when this happened to you at Alternet, what did you do? Because this also happened to other young journalists. Was there an HR department? Was there someone that you could have gone to?
No, there was no HR department. There was a board of directors who were completely obscure to me. I wouldn't have even really known who they were, let alone how to reach them. But I did understand that they were mostly Don's friends. And I had heard from other people that they had mentioned incidents of sexual harassment to the board and had them brushed off. So mostly what I did was talk to my coworkers about what I was experiencing, realized that it wasn't just me and there were patterns to his abuse. And at one point I did actually speak with a lawyer about suing, but I learned that that's not easy to do either. And as much as I wanted to, it wasn't really an option because I would have had to have proof that I had complained first and that he then did it again. And because I felt like I had no one to complain to, I couldn't do that either.
A number of women who spoke out at Alternet said that they've held onto this for so long, and over the years, it really affected them very deeply. You know, they'd go months without thinking about it, and all of a sudden it would come up again. What was that like for you?
It was hard. I was really young and excited to be being published and to be working with a team of women who I really looked up to. And it was hard to feel like I had kind of gotten a break, but the reality of that break was that I would be sexually harassed kind of day in and day out. And as someone else had mentioned, you know, when you're a journalism student, and I wasn't, this wasn't even a master's, just undergrad, everyone in my class was a girl. Mm. And so to graduate and realize that it was going to be a completely male-dominated industry and that the reality of it would be that I would be treated very poorly, it was upsetting. You know, it was not an exciting time for me to be realizing what it's like to be an adult and to be a woman in media.
Kristen Gwynn is a freelance reporter on the drug policy beat. She began her career at Alternet. She worked there from 2011 to 2013. And Alternet's executive editor and founder, Don Hazen, recently resigned after BuzzFeed broke a story about a wide range of accusations. Kristen says that she was sexually harassed day in and day out. We're also joined today by Catherine Goldstein, a digital journalist focused on women and work. She just wrote a piece for Vox about women who've been driven out of journalism because of harassment. And Christina Lopez is an Emmy Award-winning journalist and educator. Her work has been featured on NBC, ABC News, The Chronicle, and she's a reporter with KVPR, Valley Public Radio. Christina, you wrote a piece for Bakersfield.com called When Does Zero Tolerance Against Sexual Assault Mean Zero Tolerance? You write, it happened suddenly, almost in a single instant. The touch was surreal, inappropriate, and life-changing. And if you don't mind, would you please tell us your story?
Sure. It happened last year, and, you know, I think I can speak for all of those affected by sexual assault. Once you are assaulted, you never forget it, whether it's the first time or multiple times. It never leaves you. And I know that day I remember thinking from the very beginning, from the very moment, it was inappropriate, it was wrong, and little did I know at the time, you know, that I had had witnesses as well. So I think for me, having that advantage, I guess you could say, of having witnesses really did help me to kind of validate my statements. And so many times the thinking is that these victims aren't believed, right? Whether it's men or women, there's a sense of disbelief in that, no, that couldn't have happened, not here, not at this place, not by this individual. And it was only until others, you know, finally said something as well that, you know, the story became truth. But I think from my own experience, I did feel very isolated. I don't feel that the individual who assaulted me, this wasn't their first time, but this was the first time that it was reported. And I think that is part of the work culture in some of these places where we work, that it is such that you don't feel comfortable coming forward because of who you work with or who you work for, and also maybe who you are in the work environment, right? Maybe you're a new reporter, maybe you don't have those alliances, and maybe you haven't established those relationships with those coworkers or even with your boss. And so for me, I had already been in this newsroom for over a year, and you know, what helped me too was to know that I knew it wasn't right, and I knew that it wasn't my fault, and I knew that I had to do something. I had to report it, and I think that is the biggest misstep that most victims don't do right away is report it. And that is the hardest part, to come forward with your story, because of all the disbelief that may be surrounding your story or your account. Nonetheless, if it's not reported, in a lot of instances, it didn't happen, right? And so for me, it was important that I go straight to HR with what happened. You know, regardless if it was one time or several times, I knew I had to come forward with my story, and once I did, an investigation began. But I think if I hadn't gone forward, I would still be with this experience inside of me, and I wouldn't be able to come forward in the way that I did. And really, at the end of the day, I wouldn't be truthful to myself.
In your piece, you write that in between reporting, writing, and producing, you would take alternate routes to the bathroom for fear you would run into this individual and be forced to relive the painful details of the assault. What happened after you shared your story with HR?
After I shared my story with HR, I didn't feel very supported. I had to ask my supervisor for counseling services because I knew I had to take care of myself mentally. Because I was still working with this individual after the assault, it would mess with my psyche. and I would not feel safe. I would second guess myself. I would be paranoid. I would think, is this individual going to do this again? And I thought, I need to protect myself. And so, you know, I didn't really feel the full backing and support of HR. HR was also not in the same building as my workplace, so it made it very hard, right? Mm-hmm. I went several times to my boss because he was the one directly in line to kind of address my questions and concerns. But I knew first and foremost that I had to take care of myself because I was going to go in this tailspin, which I eventually did. I was diagnosed with acute PTSD. I was on antidepressants. I had never been medicated before, so this was a completely new experience for me.
Wow.
And it was scary, and it was surreal, and I really did feel like I was living a double life.
Mm. I mean, that's the thing that we don't really talk about because things are moving so quickly. The triggers, I mentioned this a little bit yesterday, but just how do you deal with the PTSD, having to relive this over and over again? When HR didn't support you, so we're talking with Kristen about not having an HR department at all. Christina, you did have an HR department, but you're saying that the department didn't support you. Is this person still on the air?
This HR did not support me, let me clarify, until later on.
Okay.
Initially, you know, there was calls made and there was, you know, a conversation had, probably a few conversations, about three, during the course of the investigation. Okay, but after that, those conversations waned, and I was kind of forced to navigate this unknown area by myself until about several weeks later. This individual is still on air and still reporting and still in that capacity. You know, I knew because of who I was and because of who this individual was that there was no way that I could continue on in the same path that I was. And so I resigned. I made the decision to resign. I don't regret resigning, and I don't regret coming forward with my story. And there should never be that feeling of regret for victims.
Right.
This isn't something that you caused. Unfortunately, this is something that has happened to you, but it doesn't have to define you or your career going forward.
Christina Lopez is an Emmy Award-winning journalist and educator, and she wrote about being harassed at a TV job for Bakersfield.com. You can find her piece at yourcallradio.org. Kristen, Gwen, I know we have to let you go, but I wanted to ask you, what would you like to see change? Earlier, you said you're kind of wondering where this is all going. Will it stop? Will we actually see changes? And these are questions we're going to continue asking. But when you're looking at power structures in newsrooms, what changes would you like to see?
I think that the best way for us to really, for workers to protect themselves would be to form effective unions. And that once we can, and that's what Sarah Jaffe, who is an excellent labor reporter and who I worked with at Alternet, has made a point to say, is that until, you know, we actually empower workers to protect themselves and have a voice against their bosses, it's going to be hard for women or anyone to feel like there is any recourse for them when they're being mistreated.
That's a great point. I've been wanting to do a show about unionization efforts currently happening right now at the LA Times and Vox. Do you know of any others?
I know there have been many recently, including in New York media, Gothamist and DNA Info were unionizing, but then immediately shut down by their funder. So that's, you know, also concerning is that, you know, should you unionize, you can be retaliated against. And what I think what makes this so, dealing with sexual harassment in media so difficult is that you understand that you're in an industry where job security is minimal, if anything.
Right.
So you don't want to jeopardize, you know, your employment.
Well, Kristen, thank you for sharing your story. We're so glad that you're still a reporter, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Kristen Gwynn is a freelance reporter on the drug policy beat. She began her career at Alternet. She worked there from 2011 to 2013, and she told BuzzFeed, who broke the story about executive editor and founder Don Hazen, There was inappropriate touching, hugs, and kisses at the office. She says that sexual harassment happened day in and day out. Dawn Hazen recently resigned after BuzzFeed broke that story. Coming up after the break, we'll continue speaking with Christina Lopez, an Emmy Award-winning journalist and educator. She writes about her harassment at a TV job. It happened last year at Bakersfield.com. And we'll continue speaking with Catherine Goldstein. She's a digital journalist focused on women and work. She wrote a piece for Vox about women who've been driven out of journalism because of harassment. And on today's Your Call, we are continuing our Me Too series by talking about what happens when journalists say, "I was sexually harassed." This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. We are continuing our Me Too series today. Tomorrow, we will talk about women in low-wage jobs, janitors, domestic workers, waitresses. There have been many, many studies about low-wage workers, and they find that the lower the wage, the more harassment. This is finally getting the attention it deserves. We did a show about low-wage workers and Me Too a couple months ago, but we will do one tomorrow to find out what has changed and how these workers are fighting back. Today, we are talking about what's happening in the media world. So many journalists have lost their jobs over sexual harassment allegations. The list is so long, and many of these names are very familiar to all of us. Tavis Smiley with PRI and PBS, Matt Lauer at the Today Show, Charlie Rose at PBS, Michael Oreskes at NPR, Tom Ashbrook at WBUR, a number of men at WNYC, John Hockenberry, Leonard Lopate, Jonathan Schwartz. They've either lost their jobs, resigned, or are being investigated. So on today's Your Call, we are talking about what happens when journalists say, "Me too." And if you have a story to share, we'd love to hear from you. You can be anonymous, 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. If you are a journalist or were a journalist and maybe left the industry because of harassment, we'd love to hear your story. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. If you work at a media outlet and there has been sexual harassment and you have a story to share, and then also, if you are familiar, if you're just kind of shocked by all of this and overwhelmed by it, I mean, a lot of people say they're not shocked, but the list just continues to grow. So what do you think about this, and how do you think media outlets like NPR, WNYC, should deal with sexual harassment? 866-798-8255. I also just wanted to be clear. Christina Lopez is joining us, and she wrote about her experience for Bakersfield.com, but it didn't happen at Bakersfield.com. She's an Emmy Award-winning journalist and educator. Her work has been featured on NBC News, ABC News, and The Chronicle. Catherine Goldstein is a digital journalist focusing on women and work. She's a 2017 Nieman Fellow, and she wrote a piece for Vox about women who've been driven out of journalism because of harassment. Catherine, obviously it's so hard to know how many women have left, but Kristen makes a really good point about just how difficult it is to get work. I mean, if you're freelancing, a lot of people don't realize that the pay has actually come down. You know, you used to get, say, $500, $1,000 for a story, and sometimes I'm seeing $150. So it's really hard to make ends meet as a freelancer. And then once you get a gig, you don't want to leave because these jobs are so hard to come by. So what really struck you when you started doing research about women who have left journalism because of harassment?
Well, I think you make an excellent point that women who are starting their careers and who are freelancers are some of the potentially the most vulnerable people to this kind of behavior. The landscape in journalism is so unstable. There's so much turnover and instability in terms of finding a job that speaking out, people really do fear that they're going to be jeopardizing their long-term career prospects. And that's really sad. In terms of what I found in researching my story is that young women, I spoke with mostly young women at the beginning of their careers, and they really made a calculus that they had such negative experiences with harassment and feeling totally, both online and in person, and feeling like they were so unsupported in what they were dealing with, that they made a calculus that journalism just wasn't worth it. Mm-hmm. It's already a risky career. And even though that they were really smart and had a lot to contribute, they just felt like they should find a profession that wasn't going to be so sexualized or feel such so difficult for them to really make their way in. And that's a really sad calculus for a woman with a lot of promise to be making at the beginning of her career.
Christina, what would you add to that? Luckily, you decided to stay in journalism, but so many women just didn't. They left. They were forced out. They just didn't want to deal with it.
I think that's a decision that every journalist has to ask themselves. I think it becomes a question that you do have to grapple with, depending on the severity of your own situation. And like I said, mental health plays a big factor. If this is something that has continued to affect your daily life, affect your daily relationships, then it's really something that you might want to reconsider. And I know a lot of women and men don't have those options, especially young journalists just starting out. You want to believe that your career is going to give something back to you, and so you need to invest in that. And if this happens early on in your career, then what are your options? What are you left with?
Right.
For a lot of young journalists, it's student loans, right? It's working on our own, especially those freelancers, which, you know, they are on that daily grind, that hustle, and they rely on those paychecks. Sometimes paycheck to paycheck. And so it really does become a choice that you have to make. If you decide to stay with it, I would suggest really making sure that you are stable and secure in all areas of your life, physically, mentally, emotionally, because after some time, that can take a toll on you, your family, and, of course, your work.
Right. And I also want to be clear about what we're talking about, because when we first did a show about journalism, a couple people emailed and said, well, you're uncomfortable. He sent you some emails that were unprofessional. Mm-hmm. You know, is that cause for firing someone? So I just want to be clear about what women are actually dealing with. So WBUR has had to write about allegations made against On Point host Tom Ashbrook. And this piece came out last month. I looked for updates, but so far haven't had any. They're just currently investigating Tom Ashbrook, and he has fill-ins. And this is according to WBUR. There are now at least 23 current and former WBUR employees who've alleged verbal abuse, intimidation, and or unwanted touching by Tom Ashbrook. 15 say they went to managers asking for help. 10 of the 23 say they left On Point because of a hostile, demeaning working environment. They include women and men who say Ashbrook called them into the studio, told them they were worthless, and described their work using profanity. One remembers Ashbrook crushing the script she'd given him into a ball and throwing it at her. A male producer says Ashbrook would reminisce about a woman at a bar in Asia who could perform sex tricks with darts. A female producer says she remembers Ashbrook looking through the glass that separates the studio and the control room and muting his microphone to complain about a guest the producer had booked who was not in studio. She says Ashbrook referred to the guest using an expletive and a highly offensive term for female genitalia. The producer says she stopped working for the show shortly thereafter. Catherine, I think it's really important to be specific with these examples. Can you talk about
absolutely.
That?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. I think in my reporting, one of the people I interviewed, Kate Havard, was an intern at the Washington Post covering the Maryland legislative session. And so one thing we don't often talk about with journalists who've experienced harassment is often that harassment can come from sources, because women are have to go out into the field, interview people, and those people often feel that they're not subject to workplace rules. And it can put women in a very, very difficult situation. So Kate Havard had a slew of experiences, legislators catcalling her, legislators trying to take her out on dates in inappropriate ways that made her really uncomfortable. She once had a legislator call her into his office and chase her around with antlers, just like in a licentious way. Things that she really wanted to be taken seriously as a journalist and a reporter, and instead she was treated basically as like a pretty plaything by all of these legislators. And she went to a senior colleague who didn't really have much advice. She didn't feel particularly supported by the organization, and I think that that's really sad. Another woman I interviewed who chose to remain anonymous was still in college as she was writing about video games and for a video game website, and received tons of death threats, rape threats. People found photos of her family and her parents' address to threaten her. Mm. And basically, her supervisor didn't believe her and told her if she wanted to make it in this business that she better toughen up, and then refused to give her more assignments. So these are the sorts of things that I don't think women should have to deal with if they want to be journalists. These women have a lot to contribute, and getting through these really difficult experiences shouldn't be the bar for entry into this field, where we need a lot of different kinds of people's voices.
Right. And Christina, when we're talking about high-level radio jobs, or especially TV jobs, and you have young people working with people like Matt Lauer, for example, or Charlie Rose, in the case of Matt Lauer and Charlie Rose, the young women who worked with them said they just wanted advice. They wanted a mentor. You know, they wanted some feedback on their work, and therefore they went to dinner to try to get that advice, and they ended up being sexually harassed. So, Christina, can you also talk about the power structures in place, especially when you're talking about working at the Today Show with someone like Matt Lauer?
Anytime you work at the network news level, you're going to be dealing with these veteran journalists who have been there for decades, and they've reported on history, very well-known stories. And, you know, as young journalists, we want to learn from these veterans. We want to become their mentees, and we almost want to kind of become their protégés in a way. The goal would be for any young journalist working in the network news level to someday maybe co-anchor alongside one of these veteran journalists, and to say that I wrote through the ranks working alongside one of these individuals. But I think the problem that happens here, aside from the power structure, is this idea that we need to ask ourselves what's appropriate. And it has to come from both sides, from journalists who've worked there for decades, and also for the newcomers, the interns, the very young journalists who are just rising through the ranks, right? We have to understand, you know, is it appropriate for me to stand in a stranger's office with the door closed? Because at the end of the day, this individual behind a desk is a stranger to you. You don't know their intentions. You don't know their past. You only know their body of work, right? And they're looking at you, and they're not looking at your body of work. They're literally looking at your body. And it's becoming this imbalance. Aside from the power struggle, I think young journalists, they don't want to ruffle feathers, right? They want to please everybody, and they want to say yes to you know, meetings and encounters that, you know, they may feel uncomfortable with. You know, as a Latina, I would never put myself in a situation where I have to made to feel uncomfortable, put in a corner or close a door. You know, I always want there to be some kind of avenue where I can easily say, you know what, I'll get back to you on that. Why don't we step out here into this lobby? Why don't we sit down here on this couch where there's people walking by? Right? You never want to be alone with somebody in that sense. And I think as young journalists, there is this sense of, you know, wanting to please as many people as we can and saying yes, not being that person who says no. Because you want to rise through your career, you're eager to say yes. You're eager to jump at the chance to stay late, right? To go on coffee runs. And with that, you know, experience comes those sort of things. But I think at the end of the day, we really have to decipher what is appropriate and what isn't appropriate for the workplace. And never, ever should any type of body parts be touching, hands placed anywhere on anyone's body, whether it's a massage, you know, a hug, an embrace. It's not the type of workplace that is conducive for really advancing someone's career. Those kinds of things shouldn't really be involved in someone's career, especially when they're just starting out.
Christina Lopez teaches mass communications at Bakersfield College and reports for KVPR Valley Public Radio. She wrote a piece called When Does Zero Tolerance Against Sexual Assault Mean Zero Tolerance? She writes that in a single moment, she was sexually assaulted, touched, squeezed, and made to feel inferior. Her psychiatrist diagnosed her with acute PTSD in the weeks and months following the assault. We're also joined by Catherine Goldstein, a digital journalist focused on women and work, and she wrote a piece for Vox about women who've been driven out of journalism because of harassment. And you can join us at 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Let's hear from Judy in San Francisco. Hi, Judy. Welcome to the show.
Hi there. Let me turn this down. what I'm worried about, wondering about regarding journalists and really anybody else, might apply also to tomorrow's show, is what do or should you write or say on your reason for leaving part of your resume or interview for your next job? Because maybe now, finally, it might be okay to say sexual harassment, but there's, you know, that's going to make... That could also be a disadvantage even now. And what did you do in the past? I'm curious.
Right.
You know, have holes in your resume. But it could be a disadvantage because employers are going to say, oh, she's a troublemaker. You know, let's bypass her. You know, she might cause problems in the future.
Yeah, it's a great point. Catherine, what are your thoughts on that? Reason for leaving?
Yes, I advise journalists and young journalists on developing their careers, and I would say the simplest answer is that job was no longer a good fit for me. And you can sort of, there's a host of people, if they want to ask more questions, I think it's often useful to say something like that and then pivot into things that you're proud of and that you accomplished while you were there. Especially in media, it's such a rocky landscape that people are used to journalists moving around and maybe not staying at a place for a really long time. But I think sometimes less is more when you're going to employers. And I think that unfortunately, even though we're seeing so much positive support for women coming out, I do worry that this could hurt women's long-term job prospects for exactly the reason that the caller brought up. So right. It's a very tricky situation, and I think our society does have further to go in helping women recover from these situations and continue to grow and advance their careers.
You know, this is a good point. This is something that we haven't discussed much, but after Al Franken stepped down, there was a piece in the New Republic, and a number of Democratic staffers were quoted off the record saying that we are hearing that people don't want to hire attractive women anymore because they don't want this to happen again. Catherine, it speaks to exactly what you just said. What are your thoughts on that?
I think this sort of statement is really sad. And, you know, what Christina was talking about in terms of not wanting to be alone with men, my career has greatly been helped by many, many men. And if I hadn't been able to go to lunch with them, if I hadn't had drinks, if I hadn't had private meetings, that would have harmed my career in the long term. Now, I'm fortunate in that those instances were benevolent and did not lead to sexual harassment. But I think the idea that we want less women in our workplace is the exact wrong reaction to what's going on. I think we need to get more women into leadership positions, more women into positions of hiring authority, and to help really change our cultures. It's not just about firing sexual harassers. It's about radically changing what our workplaces look like and how they support women throughout their entire careers.
Right. Well, this is interesting. We're getting an email from actually a social media comment from Marsha. And this is speaking to what I said earlier about really wanting to be specific about the kind of harassment that women are facing. She says, I'm listening and I don't hear any incidents of abuse or assault, just stupid comments by the men. Why didn't they just say that's offensive? Please don't talk to me that way. That's dumb. I'm not comfortable. Well, Marsha, I hope you read the entire story that BuzzFeed wrote about Don Hazen at Alternet, because Kristen Gwynn was quoted saying there was inappropriate touching, hugs and kisses on the cheek at the office. He would be pointing and my boob was in the way of the direction he was aiming for. He said it possibly happened. Maybe it was purely accidental. But we're talking about a lot of things ranging from stupid comments to assault to Charlie Rose opening his robe and having nothing on to rape. It seems like, Catherine, we have to continually revisit this and talk about the specifics that women are facing.
I think it's unfortunate that because so much is coming out, there's this sort of one-upsmanship about, like, well, you know, that he never touched you, so what's the big deal? Mm. I think from my reporting and talking to women, this behavior, this persistent behavior, can have really a long-term impact. And maybe some women are able to experience these things and it not have a big impact on them, or they feel comfortable in their current work context to confront someone directly. But that's not every woman's experience. And women often also bring all of their kinds of experiences to the workplace and their different sensitivities. And I think that we should not make this a bar for entry, and we should not get into a one-upsmanship about, well, as long as you weren't raped, I don't know what you're complaining about. I think we need to take these concerns seriously and really try to make workplaces better.
Christina, what would you add to that?
You know, it starts with any moment that makes you as a woman in the newsroom feel uncomfortable. It can be a touch. It can be something that was verbally said to you. But that first moment, if it makes you uncomfortable, say something to that individual. Now, you may not want to go to HR. You can if it calls for that. But really, say something to that person if that person has made you feel awkward, uncomfortable, uneasy in any way, right? We do it to people online all the time. We don't have a problem sharing our opinions online to people we've never met face to face, but yet when it comes to somebody who is abusing us in the workplace, we step back. We say, you know, it'll go away. We excuse it. We dismiss it. And I think that mentality has to change. Now, if you don't say anything, and the problem will only persist. It could be pushing the envelope. The offender, the abuser will see, let me see how far I can take this. You know, it starts with an email. It starts with a photo. It can start with a touch, and then who knows, that touch could be continual. And it could lead to other instances where you're made to feel less than, where you're made to feel inferior, and you may feel like you brought this upon yourself, when in reality you have not, right? And so I really do think it starts with us really saying something to our offenders first and foremost. And if it's really uncomfortable and it really persists, go to HR. There's nothing that says you can't do that. And that's what HR is there for. They're there to help you. They're there to take care of their employees, to provide a safe work environment. You should never feel like you feel unsafe at the place where you work, because a lot of times, especially as journalists, where we work is almost like our second home. Who we work with, mm-hmm. is almost like our second family. And you want to trust where you work. You want to trust where you spend the majority of your time. And so I think it would start with changing that mentality to really say, hey, you know what? That wasn't okay. I don't appreciate that. Please don't do that again.
And Alex writes in, why is it so minor just to be made to feel uncomfortable? Why don't we get to say unapologetically that girls and women should not have to swim against this energy-sapping current of verbal and physical dodging, decisions about how to respond, split-second choices about the range of possible consequences, etc.? We are almost out of time, and I want to make sure you both share with us the changes that you would like to see, you know, especially at a time when it's a very difficult environment for journalism right now. Financially, it's very hard for young journalists to find jobs, really hard for women, even harder for women of color. Catherine, what are some changes you'd like to see?
Well, I believe that newsrooms have to think holistically about how a wide range of people are going to be able to thrive in their work environment. And it's not just about, oh, we've created a sexual harassment hotline or we got a new HR person. It is about supporting women from the moment they start as an intern through all phases of their life. And that actually includes comprehensive family leave policies. We lose a lot of women when they choose to have children because they feel unsupported in the work environment. And that often leads to less women getting into these positions of leadership. You got 70% of journalism schools graduating women, and you've got 37% of the people who are leading news organizations are women. A lot is happening between those two times, and I think there's a lot we can do to make newsrooms more supportive of women at all stages of their lives. And I think that we need to broaden the conversation out beyond just firing offenders.
Christina, what changes would you like to see?
I think news organizations really need to be held accountable, and that means turning the mirror on themselves and reflecting our bad behavior, right? As news organizations, we have to really look at our policies and really say, is this really working? Maybe it worked back then. It's not working now. We need to change our policies to really reflect our newsrooms and the experiences that our individuals in these newsrooms are bringing. And another note I wanted to point out from one of the social media mentions is that women who have been sexually assaulted and then either resign or get let go or leave and then try to find work in another journalism platform, finding it hard, I would encourage news organizations to hire these individuals because that will make your newsroom more diverse. Right, especially as these reports are coming out, we have individuals who are writing about these sexual assaults taking place in the newsroom when they have no experience with them. I would say someone who has lived through that, someone who has dealt with that, someone who is working through that. If they have that experience under their belt, maybe they can treat that story with a little bit more of a perspective, right? And I would also say that, you know, diversity doesn't just mean the color of your skin. It also means the background of experiences that you bring to that newsroom. Mm-hmm. And especially as women, you'd be hard-pressed not to find a female journalist who hasn't been sexually assaulted or harassed, whether it was decades ago or a week ago.
Yep.
Right? So it's becoming more the norm, and more of the faces that are reporting in our workplaces are those of sexual assault victims. It's just it's not a trend. I think it has been ongoing for decades. It's becoming trendy now to speak about it, to finally speak up, and I think it's great. I think more women need to come forward, and I think we need to start holding those people in powerful positions accountable, whether those are professors or whether that is our professional people in higher positions, bosses, supervisors, even HR.
Christina Lopez reports for KVPR Valley Public Radio. She writes about her harassment incident at a TV job. The article is called When Does Zero Tolerance Against Sexual Assault Mean Zero Tolerance? You can find it at yourcallradio.org. Catherine Goldstein wrote a piece for Vox about women who've been driven out of journalism because of harassment. She's a digital journalist focused on women and work. Christina and Catherine, thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Coming up tomorrow, we'll continue our Me Too series by talking about women in low-wage jobs, janitors, domestic workers, waitresses. So many studies show that the lower the wage, the greater sexual harassment. But this is changing. It is finally getting the attention it deserves. We'll talk about that tomorrow. Your Call is produced here at KALW. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. Thanks for joining us.